Shaquille O'Neal steals our hearts, the Wolfman's got nards, and we're going down to South Park for the very first time this week on 30-2010.
2010.
Oh, respect our authority. Yeah, I get to say that again with no irony. Welcome to 302010. The internet's leading time machine to the past. I kind of combined two promos there. where we look back this week in history, 30, 20, and 10 years ago. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Antista.
I'm Dave McLovin Rudden.
I'm steelworking stripper Diana Goodman.
Oh my, this is going to be a really exciting episode because not only is there one of the most long-running animated shows of all time debuting in it, we have some really, really regrettable films to talk about.
We got some great films to talk
about. Yeah,
some
great ones too.
I know, but my key highlight here, why do I focus on the negative?
Yeah.
We're going to tell you everything you need to know that came out within the period of August 11th through August 17th, 1987, 1997 and 2007, and oh man, it's going to be a fun ride.
Yeah.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
It makes me feel so old that I enjoyed the cruise that much.
Yeah.
I really love the video I put together of the horn going off. So what I had done, the original
like
caption...
kind of like shitty Apple music.
It is. Yeah. It's supposed to look really cute and Apple-y, and then the ship horn goes off, and it is the loudest thing we've ever heard. And there's like what the original caption was supposed to imply... Spoiler, she said yes. And like to get people to watch it, because I turned the volume way up to have a horn blare in your face.
Yeah.
And I totally lost my balls. And she's like, why? I said it was okay. Because like, I don't know, I probably should have.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
And like, I'm making it... Like everybody, like all your friends will think I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
They won't know that you helped me write this. And I'm like, I'm just kicking myself every day because the video was so funny and supposed to be a fake proposal. And my girlfriend knew about it.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
A little bit of news up at the top. 1987, August 11th. No, this is August 17th. Rudolf Hess, 96, commits suicide after 46 years in prison.
Yep.
46 years in prison?
Yeah.
Is this somewhere where they don't have the death penalty?
Well, yes. I mean, so Hess was a pretty top-ranking Nazi, and somewhere during the war, I'm really unclear on, like, was this his plan or someone else's plan? He, like, parachuted into Scotland and was like, hi, I'm here to negotiate. And they're like, the fuck? And they...
That was a surrender?
I guess. Or he was saying, like, I guess he was... It was a little unclear if he was just sort of trying to, like, defect from the Nazis, mm-hmm. or if he really was like, I can fix this for you, or what. But whatever. I mean, he still was a high-ranking Nazi scumbag. So they imprisoned him. He was imprisoned in the Tower of London for a while.
Holy
which
what?
Is... Weird because
it's the
most
Game of Thrones thing I ever heard.
Seriously, when you go to the Tower of London and actually like their little brochure mm-hmm. as you walk in, it's like all the famous people have been here, and there's like a picture of like someone who's supposed to be Anne Boleyn and someone else who's like medieval and then a Nazi.
Ooh.
And they're just standing together and you're like, one of these things is not like the other.
No cosplay, please.
Yeah. So eventually they put him I think they tried him at Nuremberg and decided, yeah, okay, life. We won't hang you with the rest of these assholes. Mm-hmm.
It seems like a...
Well, just tell everybody who you are in prison so they'll beat the shit out of you and want to rape you.
It seems like, you know, you can get rid of the death penalty, but still have a logistical way to talk monsters into suicide every single day.
I mean, it took him a while.
It took him a while.
96.
Giant state burden.
I know one of the leading reasons that he committed suicide is they wouldn't let poor Rudolph join in any Nazi prisoner games.
Not that Rudolph. We're going to have to move into the movies of 1987. Released through August 11th through August 17th. Oh, man. A lot of these, I remember a lot of these were like things I was sick of airing on Encore and HBO.
Yes.
Lady Beware with Diane Lane.
Oh, man. This is, the trailer is a lot of fun, but it's not, it's too visual. It's Diane Lane is, she designs like department store windows. Diane Lane was so, she's always been gorgeous. She's still gorgeous, but man, younger, even then, it's like, fuck, you haven't aged. She designs store windows, and then she's got a stalker who's like calling her like, I saw what you did in the window. Who is this?
Like, oh, and then she drives away and just sees a license plate that says, Lady Beware.
It's just like, I've seen this movie 1,000 times.
What about Lionheart with Eric Stoltz and Gabriel Byrne?
This movie has disappeared from the face of the planet.
A couple of these films have.
I could not find anything, and I can't believe it because it was like, Talia Shire and her husband produced it. I think Francis Ford Coppola is involved. He didn't direct it or anything, but it's like Eric Stoltz is a crusader and he's got to save all these orphans from Gabriel Byrne, who's trying to save him into sell him into slavery. And it's like vaguely based on the Children's Crusade. Like, this is fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, it does exist. It's all on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. A couple of these movies had that distinction a long, long time ago, and it feels like our shows are old now. Laser Time did an episode about movies that still aren't on DVD. And one of those, one of the ones that's most demanded is the Fat Boys Disorderlies.
Disorderlies, which I watched on HBO way back in the day. Once.
I mean, it was played all the time. Even when I didn't have HBO, like, you just turn it on at a friend's house and Disorderlies would be playing. Because it seemed, it had everything. It was a fucking, just a high, like, not high concept, a lowbrow comedy that kids could like with the newest, coolest kind of music there was. As a little kid, when you discovered rap, you probably did it through the Fat Boys because they were like everywhere representing the entire genre. In hindsight, it might not have been a good idea because I thought every single hip hop jam had to have a and they don't. They're not all Beach Boys covers.
Yeah, this seemed like in 1987, if you were funny and good at music, you got like the 3-deal package.
Yeah.
You got the movie, you got your CD, you got the TV show.
We just talked about Madonna's Who's That Girl?
Yeah. Like, Weird Al would probably, like, I get the same thing in a year or two with UHF, but I don't remember anything of Disorderlies except for the Fat Boys pushing around old guys in wheelchairs.
I mean, it's like, it's Three Stooges-esque, and it's not high comedy, and it's not brilliant, but it was a weird thing to kind of disappear forever, and I'm guessing that has something to do with music rights. I don't know. I should have done more research on Disorderlies, but hey, go listen to that Laser Time episode. We got clips and everything in there. It's too much fun stuff to talk about here, because here's a film I do remember. And Bobby
Love. Cindy Mancini and Ronald Miller live on the same street, but they're in totally different worlds.
Wouldn't you like to be popular?
Cindy's hot, Ronald's not, but he's got a plan that could change all that.
I want to rent you.
Rent me?
Yeah. You pretend you like me, and we go out for just a few weeks.
This is, Jesus, the most Trump thing in the universe. Wow. Like, it's the escort for teenagers.
I'll take you to Mar-a-Lago. It'll be great.
Can't Buy Me Love, originally titled Boy Rents Girl. Not joking.
Wow.
McDreamy, Patrick Dempsey. Because when I saw...
Doing the dude version of the, but you were wearing glasses the whole time.
Yeah, just take down your hair. Miss Jenkins, you're beautiful.
But an unpopular nerd who rents one of the hot girls to pretend to be his girlfriend to increase his status so as to attract...
Newer and hotter
women. It's not a bad scheme, and I just remember this being one of the first live-action movies I saw, and like, maybe I'm more mature than I thought. I can branch out from cartoons. I understand this. And in hindsight, it's kind of deplorable. Even though it was remade
in
2005, Love Don't Cost a Thing, I believe it's called.
Oh. Yeah.
In that case, too, it's both are... What I hate is when a movie seems to get a name first, and the name is based on a song, and that they think that's enough to buoy it at the box office. And it's like, I don't know if that was the Beatles' original version.
It was the first time.
So I'm assuming three out of the four Beatles, the ones that weren't dead at this point, signed off on this. Like, oh, that's a brilliant idea.
It's only because of how much we lived in during our era that Beatles licensing wasn't that big a deal. Yeah. Like, I can think of like a bunch of. Well, according to Garp, opens up with 64. Yeah. They used to do it all the time.
I think they'd be a little bit more selective than Boy Rents Girl. Yeah. Like,
I don't think they had their own rights anymore. I think this is after Michael Jackson bought them all.
Maybe that's how it got scattered around.
Yeah. Now Michael Jackson swooped in and outbid Paul McCartney for his own rights.
But I don't want to spoil the movie. Buddy strangles her to death. No, I'm kidding. They fall in love for real. Did you? Could you have guessed?
No.
This is a movie I don't know much about because did we not talk about this already?
Behind the cover-up.
Try and understand.
The power.
The important thing is to abort an investigation before it ever gets to you.
You haven't told me everything.
Who's running this thing at the Pentagon?
The new boy, Farrell.
So we can take the fall in case anything goes wrong.
Whoa, White House intrigue. With No Way Out.
No Way Out. I will absolutely recommend this movie.
Really?
This is a solid little thriller where, yeah, Kevin Costner and Sean Young and Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman, I believe, is the Secretary of Defense, and he is seeing... Sean Young is sort of his kept woman, but she's fallen in love with Kevin Costner, who's like in naval intelligence, and then she gets dead. Oh, no.
And Kevin Costner's going to take the rep, a patsy.
Yeah, well, then it becomes like this like tense investigation of like, they keep saying, to deflect from, you know, the Gene Hackman's involvement, is like, there's a Russian spy, did it, and we're going to find out who the Russian spy is. And it's like this really like the taught thing about like, we think that we have this photo, we're going to use our ancient computers to show this photo, and you think, oh, this Russian spy thing is, you know, just deflecting, but maybe there really is a Russian spy, and it's got a great switcheroo ending. I don't want to ruin it, but yeah, it's just a solid movie. It's just a lot of fun.
I think I can
as
spoil...
As long as the twist is an Einhorn is Finkel and Finkel is Einhorn.
I can spoil...
Oh, but there is a reference in here that was the Hot Shots 2, I think, does. If you've ever seen people making out in the back of a limo while I'm So Excited plays.
I remember that. That's, and they go into a 9.5 Weeks parody.
That's from this.
Dude, why do I know that movie so well?
Because it's fun.
I can spoil the next movie pretty confidently. It ends with a giant thumbs up.
Yes.
What a wonderful ending. Jesus, Diana, what a transition. The movie you recommended to the movie Dave and I will recommend.
Yes.
You know who to call when you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters?
We're the Monster Squad.
Ooh, Monster Squad!
Titular line.
Monster Squad so fast. Jesus, this movie is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, I mean... It is a bit, what's the word I'm looking for here? Derivative, maybe? Like, it is just like Goonies meets Ghostbusters.
Monsters.
Yeah, meets Universal's Monsters. But it's just so fun. As a kid who was watching this, I wasn't watching 87. I was watching when it was on HBO, probably like 89. But still, it's like, as an 8-year-old, it's like, oh, this is awesome. That same sort of adventure that I love in the Goonies, but with a different group of kids, and also Frankenstein is helping them. Like, oh, so fun.
Yes, fight the creature and the Wolfman and Dracula. And-
yeah. Ooh. And, like, kind of like Goonies. Actually, it's probably a little bit dirtier and, like, more...
It's got a big old F-word in there.
Got the F-word in there a bunch. Actual murder happens.
The asshole brother from the Wonder Years calling someone the F-word.
F-word, the other F-word.
The one you can't, the one you could say in a PG movie. Yeah.
There's also a lot of the third F-word fart.
Yes,
because there's a fat kid who farts.
And let us not forget, this is how I discovered the movie. The first and last time I heard the this N-word. Jesus Christ, people, no, not that one. The Wolfman's got nards.
So we did say nards, but I don't know if it was a chicken and egg situation where we heard
this. We're referencing
this.
Yeah. Like, I never heard anybody before or since say nards that's not in reference or inspired by Monster Squad.
But, I mean, this kind of recalls, I thought it was that movie Super 8?
Yeah.
Where everyone said mint, and I'm like, no one ever said mint on TV, but we would always say mint when we were kids, and now there's a movie that's finally saying mint, and that's mint that they did
that. I've never heard that. But yeah, directed by Fred Decker and written by Shane Black, one of his first films. Yeah, yeah, it holds up as really fun. Who would have known? It is the Goonies versus the Universal Monsters, and it's in that file it into that genre of children in mortal peril with a lot of guns.
No kids die. Yeah. A lot of adults die, including like the dad's best friend. Mm-hmm. Gets he gets dynamited by Dracula. Dracula throws a dynamite under a cop car and blows up the cop's best friend. Cop dad's best friend. Yeah, it is a kind of a dark movie because the kid's parents are like arguing and on the verge of divorce.
Yeah. I think to me that's what makes it perfect. There's that 80s darkness in it.
Just other stuff like the search for a virgin because they need a virgin to do the spell that will blow all of the monsters back into limbo from whence they came.
Are they not all virgins? They're children.
Yeah. But I think, they needed a female virgin.
Oh.
So they were like, hey, let's get your sister. Is she a virgin? And then she says, well, no, I did it once with Tony, but that doesn't count. And then they realize, like, oh, hit that guy's little sister. Let's get her to do it. But she can't read. So that's the problem.
So have you not seen this?
No.
It's horrible because it's like,
I watched a ton of movies for these couple weeks coming up. I figured you guys would have this one covered.
So it's got, it's sort of a horrible association because you just, so that's the virgin, this 5-year-old girl, Jesus Christ. But she, if you're a classic movie van, Diana, she's befriended immediately by Frankenstein, which is, conjures all that bride, the bride of Frankenstein scene.
Wait, and does he throw her in a lake?
He does not. But it's like redeeming himself for that.
The kids are cute movie star kids, but the Frankenstein and Dracula's movie are both amazing. I think the Dracula's movie is one of the best movie Dracula's ever. He's not trying to be too campy. He's just like serious and even throws out a couple puns. when he blows up their treehouse, that's where the Monster Squad meets. He says, meeting adjourned. Walking away from an explosion. It is it's way better than it has any right to be.
I don't know.
It should have just been a derivative ship, but it's actually kind of fun.
Yeah, I don't know why the ending is the most 80s thing ever, with Van Helsing himself falling back into hell to pull the monsters back in, but congratulating the kids as he falls through the vortex with a giant thumbs up.
And they're trying to keep Frankenstein from going into limbo, but he can't hold on, so he's getting thrown back into limbo. And the girl throws the teddy bear to Frankenstein, and he grabs it, and it's like, why is this making me so emotional?
Well, this is something I watch every Halloween, and we have a commentary up on lasertime.bandcamp.com. Obviously, you get that free from patreon.com/lasertime in exchange for $5.
And speaking of bad raps, a la Disorderly's, the Monster Squad theme that plays at the end of the movie is such dad rap.
Wonderful.
Oh, no.
Yes.
My name is Dracula, and I'm here to say...
Do they recount the movie as a rap?
Yes.
Of course
yes!
they do.
Aha!
We got the Wolfman and the Merman too. Here's Dracula. Where are you? I swear that's not in it. That's not in that. But that could be a lyric.
Yeah, that rap was written in refrigerator magnets.
Yes.
Jesus Christ. Well, moving to TV, we only have one big thing to highlight. This being the summer of '87.
This is one of those things where I was like, I saw this, and then I'm like, oh boy, YouTube, please help me. I want to find this, but no. What happened was on August 12th, 1987. NBC aired a pilot that was just a pilot, so they didn't do anything else with it, of a show called Slickers. And the cast is why I'm so angry that I couldn't get a clip of it. It starred Dana Carvey and Michael Richards as a pair of mismatch cops, which is like, these guys, they're a year off of like both hitting it big.
It's just, I'm
a year or two off.
I can't help but think like, well, who do you cast as the high-strung renegade cop
I think Dana Carvey's
got to be Dana Carvey, right?
Yeah, and then Michael Richards.
He's got to be the
one.
Riggs.
Yeah. but man, had this like even been moderately successful? Mm-hmm. Like, imagine the drastic change in the entire entertainment landscape that happens, because then you don't get Dana Carvey on SNL the next year.
Mm.
You maybe don't get that renaissance as strong as it was.
Yeah.
And
it might not still. It was. I think SNL's above cancellation, but it wasn't for about 15 years. It was talked about every 3 to 4 years.
Yes.
Is this going to work? Keep working.
And then you don't get Michael Richards in two of the funniest things to come from the 1990s, Seinfeld and UHF.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. But that is literally it for television. I'm guessing we don't have any specific games out this week.
No, because, like I said a couple weeks ago, there's no specific dates on video games at this point in time. It's just like, hey,
a window.
There are a bunch of games that came out in August. And once in a while you'll get a game that has an exact date, but I figure if they say it came out in August, we just talk about it in the beginning of August.
Yeah, I think somebody had mentioned to me that they wouldn't, it's not like they would pay extra or
they weren't really
or schedule their shipments from overseas. Like, it's just like, this is going out, and like if it takes an extra 20 days to get to Iowa, who gives a shit? Like, yeah. So there was no real release date. It didn't just show up in stores in one day.
We'll have one at the end of the month, a big game that has a definitive release date, but it's only because I think people care enough to find one.
That seems like a good time to get into the music of 1987, this being August, 11th through the 17th. New releases, Love is for Suckers by Twisted Sister. Fuck, that's edgy. Cruisin' by the Fat Boys, Death Crush by Mayhem, and Frank's Wide Years by Tom Waits. But number one, have we not talked about this?
We've done various other YouTube songs, but I'm
other songs off of Joshua Tree, release of Joshua Tree. But yeah, number one this week is Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For.
I love this song. And
it's so great.
Another one of those moments of Chris waking up. My dad, we had one stereo and one television, and I just remember being able to work at a compromise with my dad. I want to watch Saturday morning cartoons. He's like, I want to listen to this new CD. I'm like, all right, fine. I'm going to turn the sound off of the Popeye cartoons. I'm going to listen to the CD. And it was... Oh my God, I forgot the name of the dumb yellow creature from the Latter-day Popeye cartoons. But he's in a search for Sweet Pea, and this song came on, and it just blew my mind that it was a It was a 7-minute cartoon about looking for someone and with a U2 song. And so as a result of that, the song imprinted itself in my head in a way no other U2 song had done up to that point.
You invented anime music videos. Else.
Yeah, I got to recreate it on YouTube before the next YouTube apocalypse. But we will go out with I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, and we will meet you once again in 1997.
Ahoy hoy, everybody, this is Bob Mackey,
Chris Antista,
Henry Gilbert,
and when you're done listening to this, we'd like you to check out Talking Simpsons. It's our chronological exploration of The Simpsons only on the Laser Time Podcast Network,
where we'll discuss why Barney is the MVP of Season 3.
Whatever you say, Mom!
When we try to figure out what every reference means.
Weren't you one of the little rascals?
And where we'll tell you how to avoid the poison donut.
There is a poisoned one, isn't there, Smithers?
No, sir. I discussed this with our lawyers. They consider it murder.
Damn their oily hides!
For all this and more, listen to Talking Simpsons every Wednesday at TalkingSimpsons.com or wherever you find your podcasts.
I don't care who you are, where you're from. Welcome to 97.
What you doing?
As we come in with As Long As You Love Me by the Backstreet Boys.
It's begun.
We were
angry at Hanson a couple weeks ago or months ago. Now the shit has truly arrived.
Yeah,
at least Hanson played their own instruments.
In terms of my age group, I came around to music in the alternative era. So like the Trojan horse of pop seemed very insulting at the time. But little did I know, my music period was 3 years, and this lasted for the remainder of my life.
Yeah.
The Backstreet
Boys.
Well,
in a way that they like do shows in Vegas.
Dude, they are touring with New Kids on the Block and Boys to Men right now, and like everyone I know, that's like the one concert everyone I know is posting about on Facebook, because wherever they are, everyone
we're
my
all
age,
too old to go to concerts. Yeah, regularly,
every girl I know is like, that's going to be their one concert that year. Who's in their late 30s.
Yeah. Man, this actually sent me down kind of a rabbit hole because this is called The Backstreet Boys.
Yes, self-titled.
It's self-titled the U.S. debut, but it was called Backstreet's Back everywhere else because they'd already put out an album everywhere except the U.S.
Yeah, because the boy band thing not only didn't die everywhere else, it was like,
the
thing that ushered that back in the UK, and the Backstreet Boys were there to address
it. Williams.
I can't name a single song by them because by the time their popularity was influencing American acts, they overshadowed Take That over here. Pretty incredibly, but I'll Still Be Missing You is still number one.
Still. When will it end?
I'll Still Be Missing You. But we also have new releases this week. Maladjusted by Morrissey, Romances by Luis Miguel, F Sharp, A Sharp, Infinity by Godspeed, You Black Emperor, and Release Some Tension by SWV.
Sisters with Voices.
My sister kind of loved SWV. My sister had the album and the Free Willy soundtrack, so I heard a lot of SWV. I did not know they had another album.
Yep, of course they do.
But not a lot of news to talk about this week, but a whole bunch of movies.
Oh, boy, we have so much to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know where to start with this. Anywhere you want to start, Dee?
Yeah, how about we just start with the number one movie at the box office? Yeah. Kind of surprising this is number one at the box office, honestly.
Like the Amish now?
It's a place where the sheriff wears the badge.
Hey, Freddy!
Hey, Fred!
But the cops own the town.
My jurisdiction ends at the George Washington Bridge.
Freeze, police!
But half the men I watch live beyond that bridge. Where no one...
This was great.
In Copland.
Copland. And this is, like, not only Stallone's big comeback.
Yeah.
Like, he had... I mean, I was barely alive when he was like a really popular movie star. He was kind of a joke.
This is like was just after his like stop at my mom will shoot.
Yeah,
period.
And, well, him going through his like, well, I'm going to do a little
Rocky Five. No one liked, and
I never saw James Mangold's Heavy.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
but that was his debut film.
Good
this is
one.
His second film. So I was paying attention to movies. I'd never heard of this guy, and in the cast is like half of Martin Scorsese's friends.
Yeah,
Janine Garofalo. And starring Sylvester Stallone, supported by Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel, and Ray Liotta.
Wow.
Playing corrupt cops, and in a pre-Sopranos world, this goes out of its way to introduce the idea of, New York has run gangsters out of New York, but they're all in New Jersey. That's where they go to hide. That's the premise of the film, that where New York cops go to hide from the jurisdiction of... they're New York internal affairs people, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, the idea is that this is, kind of the suburb on the other side of the bridge where a fuck ton of dirty NYPD officers live. And, there's so many cops, and Sylvester Stallone has put on a whole bunch of weight. He's very doughy in this.
He gained weight for it.
It's like, he's the local sheriff, but, he's the local sheriff of this, nowhere... built place and all these fancy detectives and the money and the
street
smarts.
New Jersey sheriff dealing with all the runoff of New York cops on the take and trying to keep them in line. And it's I remember being intrigued by this but not loving it. I didn't love a James Mangold movie till Logan. Same director.
Wow, really?
Same director and writer,
So does he ever say
No.
He barely talks. He barely says a word. It's one of the most stoic performances of a very quiet man.
Yeah. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. And I like his performance out of the whole thing.
Yeah, like every movie this week is notable in a different way. What a fun time to be alive.
Yeah.
I got to play this one.
The weapons of tomorrow on the streets today. One man must stand up for justice.
We make our own kind of weapons to take out the ones in the streets. To stop an enemy without hurting them.
With a heart of gold. A will of iron.
It's hammer time.
And a body of steel.
Shaquille O'Neal is steel.
Oh, my God, is this movie stupid.
Yes, but...
Oh, Lord.
And that's what, thinking about
God
this...
God bless him, it's so stupid.
Yeah, it's sad because I think Shaquille O'Neal would probably kill to be Superman in a movie.
That was the point.
Well, steel, the character, I don't know if he existed before in a different context, but he came
when... Well, Henry's not here to explain it to you.
The Superman.
When Superman died in 1993, they essentially introduced multiple surrogates.
Yeah. They could have all potentially been Superman.
Yeah.
That was the mystery.
Yes.
Could one of these guys actually be Superman?
And one of them was an African-American man with a giant hammer. This is why he said hammer time to convey John Henry.
Something.
And covered in with skin of steel and with a Superman logo.
Yeah.
So Shaq, if you haven't seen, I don't know, his car's hat or house, loves Superman. So Quincy Jones, a black superhero. Let's fucking make this movie.
Yeah. Okay.
And so what's bizarre to me is, obviously we're in the middle of, I don't know if I could still call it the renaissance of superhero films. But, I can't... But they were so terrible.
It's 20 years later, and we're finally getting another black-led superhero movie with Black Panther.
So,
I don't think we've had one in the interim.
So I wish
two in 1997, and then none for 20 years.
And it was disappointing because people like me and Dave and Brett and Henry and little boys, we want to see a great superhero film. And I just, what was it? It gets compared to the Western a lot.
Yeah.
And I wish, Diana, I had a thorough knowledge of that genre. Because I sincerely doubt that movie spent 20 years finding its legs.
Yeah.
We're already Western fans. I wish someone could convert this into a legitimate movie wasn't embarrassing.
Yeah, no, that's true. There have been Westerns since there have been film. So,
And because this just this year, Batman and Robin, Spawn, and Steel. Movies that little Chris was out of his mind excited for that disappointed someone with not a lot of taste.
And yeah, I mean, to me, a movie starring Shaq, that's already pretty cool, except they had Shazam before that, and I think that sucked. And Ari was on the scent of it, this not being good. But I was like, I love Steel because I love Superman.
Yeah.
And I thought he was one of the coolest things to come out of that whole thing. Like, this is just a guy who wants to be a hero. He's inspired by Superman. He is not Superman, but he's still fucking strong and cool. But it's like, it all came together really cheesy. Well, like, really cheesily.
And cheap.
Cheap is a problem. I mean, you have a problem in that, like, Shaq can't play an everyman.
Yeah.
He's 9 feet tall.
Yeah.
He's not an everyman. He can play a cool guy. He's a nice guy, all that stuff. But, yeah, not a guy that's like, I've got to stand up for the little guys. Yeah. You should already. When you're standing up, you're already standing up for the little
guys. Maybe the guy in the poster you're crediting as with one word can't be the everyman.
But yeah,
and that suit is bad.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Oh,
it's real bad.
It is just sad that, like, the guy with a Superman tattoo who loves the comic that much, he gets a comic book movie and it turns out to be pretty crappy.
It harkens back to before time. Like, this is Warner Brothers DC. They could have given a shit, stepped in, like, figured out, could this lead to any other thing? And nobody did. It just was some dumb thing they could license, no different from a beach towel. Do whatever you'd like with it. Try and make some money for us. That was it.
Yeah, you can tell there's a budget going on here. This is not a movie that you feel strongly about that you want to throw money at. I mean, it's Shaquille O'Neal is fighting Judd Nelson.
and
as much as I would pay money to actually see that fight... No.
Harkening back to last week's 302010, it's directed by Kenneth Johnson, who up until that point had primarily directed Alien Nation movies. That was throughout the entire part of the 90s.
Yeah, but not known for action then.
Yeah. It's a lot of interrogation room scenes.
I did just realize there are the two black-led superhero movies this year. In between, there is Catwoman. But it has been 20 years since we've had a good one. If you want to consider Spawn good,
The response coming in from that on our on our show, the people who have watched it recently, and it is not pleasant.
1997 good.
I view it as a 90s relic, and like seeing the clips, I have, I'm like, man, I want to watch this shit again immediately. This is hilarious. but you don't. If you love the hero, maybe you don't want a campy, hilarious film. This is such a weird film. Event Horizon.
Yep.
Event Horizon. Everybody, you win.
After 7 years in deep space.
There were 18 people on board this ship when it disappeared. I want them all accounted for.
Opening outer door.
It came back, abandoned.
Any crew?
Negative. This place is a tomb.
Yes, Event Horizon, a movie I wanted to love, went to see in the theater, and I hated it.
Wow.
And I feel like that is strong. And when we do votes for 30 or on our Patreon, what movie we want to watch in our Monday night movie, this is always a strong contender for people younger. This is a modern classic. It plays on cable, but I remember this coming around the same time as Sphere. I thought they were both disappointing.
Ooh,
I thought this one was dumber. I'm like, maybe, all right, look, maybe I'm wrong about Event Horizon. And I look it up. I'm like, this is Paul W.S. Anderson,
the
legally worst director of all time.
No, so I watched this last night.
Did you?
I wanted to have this fresh in my mind. And I also watched an interesting sort of behind the scenes breakdown. And it's really a shame that it turns out the studio made them cut half an hour out of it. It was a 2-hour movie, and they had to cut half an hour out of it, including an awful lot of gore. That doesn't bother me as much, but I think there was a better movie in here that got killed by the studio, because I think the studio got something they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
Because Paul W.S. Anderson had made Mortal Kombat.
Yes.
Which made...
Hot off of Mortal Kombat.
Which is a fun B movie, and it made a buttload of money. And so they pretty much let him do what he wanted to do, and he wanted to do Haunted House in Space.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then that's what that is. But a ship goes missing... For seven years, and a salvage crew is sent out to address it.
And to get it, and it turns out, oh shit, it like opened a portal to hell, basically. So I don't think they were expecting a hard horror film, because it becomes super horrifying at the end. Oh my god, some of this stuff. And a lot of it just goes by in fast flashes, where it's like, wait, was that a guy and his head is wrapped in barbed wire and there were maggots on him? Like, real fast. Like, oh god, I'm gonna throw up. So, I mean, the gore is so fucking gory by the time it gets to the end that I don't think that's what the studio was hoping
was expecting
for.
Expecting from the guy who made the video, the most violent video game movie ever. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The video game movie based on the most violent video game of all time.
Yeah.
Most notorious. I'm not gonna modify that anymore.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna drop it.
It is weird that like I saw this. I mean, I just watched Sunshine like a month ago, which is starts out as the same premise.
Yeah.
And it's a much artier, much less gory horror film. It's more psychological. And yeah, this is just gory at the end, but it's pretty dang good. I mean, Lawrence Fishburne actually gives a great performance in this. Same with Sam Neill. The design of the ship is... I just thought it was gothic and crazy, and then found out, they intentionally based it on Notre Dame Cathedral.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's gothic spires and buttresses and weird pillars and, like, doors shaped like coffins. And
Anderson's incredible with set design.
Yeah. This is probably his best movie.
I think they did restore some of those scenes into a director's cut, so there's a chance...
Yeah, there's some of it has been found, but not all.
Yeah, there's a chance many people have seen that version of the movie, and I haven't. So I've always been curious to recheck this out, but it left such a bad taste in my mouth at the time.
This is a movie
but Diana's
that,
recommending it. What do that, I do?
I can't believe it. If you want, B horror movie in... I'd say it's a B-plus level horror movie in space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty watchable. If that's the kind of thing you're into.
The name of this movie is one where I've known of this movie for 20 years, and if you put a gun to my head before you guys described it, I couldn't have told you a thing about it. Like, they should have called like Space Hell or something. That's
Event Horizon is a thing, but in this case, it's the Nostromo. It's the name of a ship.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you do a triple feature: this, Sunshine, in 2010. They're
what
all
about Sphere?
All about going to find derelict things in space, and then bad things happen.
Or did we all agree to forget Sphere? That's a really good Sphere joke.
Let's all forget.
It's a really good Sphere joke.
Next year, I think.
Event Horizon. This movie, and our last movie, arguably the most successful
of all
of them. My favorite anecdote about it, this year was the year I became a semi-professional babysitter. Sitting for kids from my mom's recently divorced friends. All of them owned one film on VHS, and it was this one.
But these men...
I don't see why not, Gerald.
Because you're fat and he's thin and you're both ugly.
...have come up with a plan...
No, not doing it.
Come on, Dave, don't stop now.
...that's going to get them a lot of exposure.
A laughing stock, totally.
We can either forget it or do it and just maybe get rich.
This is crazy.
They may not have the talent for it.
The full Monty?
The full goddamn Monty.
The whole penis.
The full Monty. I just be livid, like having no choice but to watch this at every place I babysat, because this is a Magic Mike for the 90s.
No, it's not.
With way less attractive men in it.
Yeah,
it's
I think that's
not Magic. Magic Mike's really a drama.
Well, yeah.
The
what
first
about
one.
XXL? That's
okay, more
seen.
Like that.
Please, you take this, Dia, because I find this movie. Not obnoxious is too strong, because like it's not offensive, but it was just it was so successful and referenced in everything, and then like I completely forgot it existed until recently.
Yeah, this was. I mean, I feel bad for British cinema, honestly, because like they have like every couple of years they have the one thing that breaks through because a huge international hit, and then everyone tries to be. First, it was this is the next Four Weddings and a Funeral, and then it became this is the next Full Monty because this was a massive hit.
Yeah.
I saw this. Because, well, once we get into the end of August, I'll be moving overseas for a year to England. And so I heard this was a huge hit in England. Mm-hmm. Had to, like, drive for, like, 45 minutes to find a theater, that like, limited release theater in L.A. to see it. And I came back as a total evangelist. Like, everyone go watch this movie. Oh, my God, I laughed my tits off. And then it finally opened wide just from word of mouth, and it made a huge amount of money.
I wish I could do the math quickly and adjust for inflation. This movie made, and this might just be the American box office, $258 million on a budget of $3 million.
Wow.
When we talked about how successful Crocodile Dundee was, a cheap as fuck movie that becomes a national phenomenon, you can't imagine profits. I can't imagine profits like that.
Nope.
Holy shit. $3 million up against almost $300 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you want to get artsy about it, it's an exploration of modern masculinity.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
But, I mean, if you haven't seen it, just because maybe the ubiquity, like you were just talking about, Chris, it holds up. I watched it again.
Yeah.
Holds up.
All right. I'll
really
take it.
Really holds up.
I guarantee it's something my girlfriend loves.
Because of really strong performances.
Yeah,
of
the cast is great.
Playing it straight. Tom Wilkinson kills in this movie. Robert Carlyle, Mark Addy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Robert Baratheon stripping.
Oh my god! What? I did not make that tie together.
One of the Trainspotting guys. Which one is that?
Robert Carlyle.
Yeah, and so yeah, it's about out of work steel workers in Northern England and coming up with a stupid idea that they could put on a male stripper show and make some money. Man. Even though none of them are attractive and none of them can dance.
And I love Robert Carlyle after Trainspotting, and I don't think he's ever top-lined a film ever again. Hmm. He's in every goddamn scene of this.
Right around this time, he had a couple, but that, he's more of a supporting guy.
Diana, I don't know what you're doing to me. You've just stolen, 3.5 hours from my life by making me watch, reevaluate Full Monty and Event Horizon.
It is... really, I mean, it's cute, and maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's too cute. You're sick of the cute. I don't know. It does just have an awful lot of just wacky, goofy, cute scenes, underlined by economic devastation and depression. I mean, one of the guys, they meet him while he's trying to kill himself, and then that becomes the gag.
Hilarious.
He can't get his car started to choke on carbon monoxide.
Okay, Di, I will watch Full Monty and Event Horizon, and you have to watch Monster Squad. Okay. Your husband will thank me.
Okay.
I'm sure he will.
I'm down.
I don't know if I could follow up on that. Oh, my God.
Crazy week for TV.
It is an insane week for TV.
Lots of debuts. Well, before the debuts, August 17th, 1997, Showtime airs a version of 12 Angry Men featuring Jack Lemmon and George C. Scott.
It's good.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's totally good.
It's good. They could have been in the original.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they both could have. Yes, yeah. No, it's pretty good. It's I mean, it's only worth noting. I feel like we'll get to it when we get to, I think, the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. That Ving Rhames is going to also be in a TV movie, and he will win the Best Actor award over Jack Lemmon, and he will give an amazing speech, crying and begging Jack Lemmon to come up on stage with him.
Aww.
And it's awesome. So sweet. He's like, oh, Jack Lemmon's why I got into acting. I love him so much.
Ving Rhames?
Ving Rhames.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
Marcellus Wallace bawling over Gil from The Simpsons.
I can't wait till we get
I should have had that Emmy.
that same night, August 17th, 1997, Behind the Music debuts on
VH1.
With the episode about Millie Vanilli, probably their most famous. I have the theme for that show.
I love it.
Success, passion.
Drugs.
Worry. Heartbeat.
Money. Which, yeah, that's almost like the Twilight Zone theme. And in terms of giving me anxiety, it's like, oh man, I know I'm going to hear some really sordid stuff.
Johnny Bravo character alienated Greg from his Brady family.
But that's popular enough that they did like that Simpsons episode.
They did.
The
same voiceover actor. But, we made a parody of it a couple years ago and had to wonder if anybody got it. But it was on the air for so long. I think it came back for a while. And if you think about it, this is sort of all YouTube is.
Yeah.
It's like little like prolonged deep dives into certain things.
Except they went and interviewed people.
Yeah,
and
they went way out of their way.
And yeah, just got like footage you would never seen before. Maybe like you would have to really seek out. Like I remember I had kept some tabs on Millie Vanilli just because I found the whole thing so interesting back in the day, but like before Behind the Music, I never saw like that concert they did where the tape fucked up.
Yeah,
and, that's amazing.
Or the actual people who sang. Like they talked about it, but you'd never seen like
you see. Get
there's three people here, and two of them are women. Like how did we not know this?
Yeah.
All 50. I don't know why I was totally into this. It debuted. The Millie Vanilli episode debuted, and then immediately afterward, the Vanilla Ice episode.
Yeah, they went for the biggest targets right away, which is like really smart of them.
Well,
it was like 7 or 8 years later, and it's like now the Foo Fighters are now like.
But it's weird because
Cherry Pop and Daddies are like bands that are like, oh well, I had a drink once and I didn't like it.
They started with people they could get that were like fashion, like, oh, where are they now?
Yeah.
And gained legitimacy through those people. And then eventually, like, we just played the clip. It was the one from Metallica, who couldn't have been bigger by the time this came
out. But I was searching through a couple episodes to find just that theme.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was like Backstreet Boys a couple years later, and it's like they don't have fucking problems. And one of them's like, well, I drank a lot of my tour bus. I don't give a shit. And I also don't like your band. So why would I even want to watch this episode?
Well, so much of it is you need them after the fact when it's like, it's not going to hurt them anymore to be like, yeah. And, you know, oh, we were banging groupies 8 at a time. And here's a, you know, home video of me with, I've got Coke all over my face or whatever. It's like the Backstreet Boys are still popular when the show is on. So they have something to lose. So you're not going to hear about like their sleazy promoter.
The Millie Vanilli story was pretty definitive, and not just because of the suicide of one of the participants. But the show was so strange. I can't think of it now. Who was the guy? He like killed somebody in a drunk driving accident, but didn't have a lot of music. So like the half.
Was it the Leif Garrett? Right,
where he confronts the guy he crippled in a drunk driving accident. That's a significant portion of the episode, and I will never forget the noticeable sham of the Ricky Martin episode, who arguably has the longest period in music, being that he was an adult who had been famous all over the world since he was a kid, and two thirds of the behind the music focused on "Meet My Girlfriend." There's no way I'm gay. This song is about God. Like, then Ricky, shut up, shut up. No one cares this much. deflecting his sexuality.
It's called Chebangs.
It was bizarre to be living and watching a PR stunt to deflect from Ricky Martin's sexuality.
And also, when an episode gets like that, it's also kind of. I can't tell if it's PR if they just want to have happy endings, but like, to go back to that Backstreet Boys episode, like, and now they have a new album and everything's great. And it's like, is it really? No, they're going to have, there's some more problems in their horizon.
We have a follow-up episode on this in another 5 years.
I remember that specifically in the Sir Mix-a-Lot one. And Sir Mix-a-Lot is back in the studio with a pair of unlikely collaborators, the President of the United States of America, the Lump people.
Oh,
and it's like, what was the result of Lump and Baby Got Back? When are we going to see those? I saw it on VH1, goddammit. And the biggest mystery, cause someone just asked me now, what is VH1 airing today? What is their identity? Because MTV dropped music a long time ago. What the hell is airing on VH1 right now? Let us know in the comments.
I wouldn't be surprised if they aired either of the other two shows that debuted this week, because they both seem very VH1-y. Let's start with The View, which debuted on August 11th, 1997.
Shit, The View is 20 years old.
Yes. And the original lineup was Barbara Walters, Joy Behar, Meredith Vieira, and Debbie Matenopoulos. I think with the exception of Debbie Matenopoulos, they were all on for a long time. Yeah. They would always cycle out the fourth person. Joy Behar, she left for a couple years in the 2000s, but she's back, so she's the only remaining host
still
there.
She is the reason I watched the show, because I thought she was hilarious in Dr. Katz, and I'd never seen her anywhere else.
Yeah.
And
I have the intro. It's where Barbara Walters explains The View.
I had this idea for a show. Different women. Different points of view. Maybe a little too different.
Wow, I'm already putting on my slippies. Wait, it's a morning show. Meredith Vieira got bumped up to one of those Good Morning America shows that I've never seen. And everybody on this show briefly was like a huge star.
Yeah, and the show also got was known for a while for like the conflict that would happen on the show, because you'd get like
conservative.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck from Survivor. She was a big conservative. She would butt heads with Meredith Vieira and Whoopi Goldberg, and then she would leave for a few years, and then Whoopi would leave for a few years, or Rosie O'Donnell would come on, and it's like kind of a revolving door for like the third and fourth seats. But Joey Behar and Barbara Walters, I feel, were like the bedrocks of that show.
It's a little crazy the show is still on. I still think it's a little nuts that like, why did it take them so long to find this format?
Yeah, like, it seems kind of obvious. It's like, you know, after you get past like Good Morning America or Today Show, which are sort of new, sort of varieties, interesting stuff to like, yes, let's have a news discussion show, but not in the screaming pundit heads way of just like, it's just sort of, it's a news show, but kind of not.
This was still the time of soaps when
network
television wouldn't acknowledge men during the day. And why did this... get rid of the scripts and the sets and the actors, and now you have a much cheaper show.
Yeah, we could just like talk about news and stuff, and our personalities will come through. Honestly, it's a podcast.
The original podcast. Yes. The original podcast.
And there are, I think at this point in time, and maybe a couple of them have been canceled since, but there were like two or three other Views that are just different networks. There's like The Talk.
Right. And that was the men's one, right?
Yeah.
There was one that was men.
One that was men.
With Sarah Gilbert.
I forget what they were called.
Did Sarah Gilbert come through The View also?
I don't know.
Could have. But
I
there
don't
were
know.
Other
There's
ones.
A couple other ones like this now.
Yeah.
Just a big fan of hers.
Oh, me too. Oh, I like her.
And the.
And then some for the guys. South Park debuted on August 13th, 1997, with the episode Cartman Gets an Anal Probe.
I cannot believe that this show made it past three seasons.
Yeah. Oh, well, hold on. Let me. I found this clip because I was instantly on board just
Me too.
I recorded the first episode. I remember. I don't know how I knew about it, but
before
I was like,
it aired,
I'm
and
in
like
for this.
This is a promo before it ever came out, and I love how it ends.
Colorado. It'll make you laugh.
Laugh all you want. I'm the one who's gonna be on TV looking all buff.
It'll make you cry.
Do your impersonation of David Caruso's career!
It'll make you puke. South Park, Why They Created the V-Chip. Premieres Wednesday, August 13th at 10 p.m. only at Comedy Central.
Why They Created the V... I've tried several times to try and figure out what... The V-Chip, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The V-Chip, kids, was when analog television exists and they wanted to find a way to not lock out entire channels but entire shows and warn parents about the content of television.
Right, they had the TV ratings that we talked about them rolling out this year.
Yeah.
I think we had them in 97.
This year, maybe some...
But 96,
like,
yeah.
There wasn't anybody who on purpose went for the TVMA except HBO did. Like, Oz had a TVMA, but I want to say South Park is the first... basic cable TVMA show, like intent, like that's what it is. It wasn't an accident, and that's what it's going to be. It's just so bizarre to think of the show as 20 years old, and it's also, I don't know, I'm sure it doesn't dog them, but the idea that like it's been 20 fucking years, it's been 20 years, that's really impressive. It'll always be behind The Simpsons in like every what number of episodes.
Yeah, well they do 10 a year compared to 20 to 25.
Yeah, and I had a brief little like history course. This is not going to work that well because it's primarily visual. But Trey Parker and Matt Stone, Colorado film students who graduate and make a really crude construction cutout thing. Here's a clip from this first Spirit of Christmas. You'll notice Cartman is the one who dies.
Oh my God! Rusty killed Kenny, dude. I told you not to put that fucking hat on Frosty's fucking head. Now,
that's the first ever South Park animation. It caught the attention of a Fox executive,
and also some. I mean, it was like passed around. I think.
Yeah.
Well, it was commissioned and paid for by an executive to give his Christmas cards to his friends and employees, and that came. It's the one I think most people have seen. It toured in animation festivals. No one seems to know. I'm sure someone knows who owns the rights to it, but it was like commissioned by one dude. So it's all over the place. You can't find many South Park clips on YouTube. You can find this whole thing, Spirit of Christmas, but you've probably seen it.
Dreidel, dreidel, dreidel. That's a stupid song. Yeah, Hanukkah sucks. Don't you oppress me, fat boy.
Don't call me fat, buttfucker.
Then don't belittle my people, you fucking fat ass.
Dammit, don't call me fat, you buttfucking son of a bitch.
So it's bizarre. Well, one, you couldn't even you would not be able to tell that was Stan talking early in the clip because he sounds just like Kyle. But that there's a lot of DNA in this little short that made it into the show.
Yeah.
And like the first episode looks just like this. It's literally construction paper. I think they abandoned that very fast.
But yeah, there aren't a ton of clips online because you have to.
South Park Studios was early on, like we talked about that.
You can get them on Hulu, but on YouTube they're not as plentiful. I did put one in there in the doc if you want to play it. But this this is relating to the episode, which is about Cartman being abducted by aliens, getting an anal probe, and the aliens coming back to Earth. Above.
Damn it! Ha ha! Mr. Hat yelled at you. Ah, my ass!
Damn, Cartman!
Probe. It's shooting fire from Cartman's rectum. No, that was just a dream.
Eric, do you need to sit in the corner until your flaming gas is under control?
No, Mr. Garrison, I'm fine.
Pip's on fire. But
farts on Pip, a character I don't think they've used in like 10 years.
And this is like, I think even more than The Simpsons. Like the difference between early South Park and more modern South Park,
which
I would even say is like after like five seasons or so, like the last 15 seasons are all like, they're usually pretty good, whereas The Simpsons, it's like...
I talked about it on Talking Simpsons about Family Guy, because it's the opposite. Like, please don't show me the first 7 years of Family Guy.
I don't want to see the first five
seasons.
I don't want to see the first five seasons of South Park, because it's a lot of...
Well,
their satire of celebrities is a lot more terrible.
David Caruso's career. There was a joke in there about
Mecca
that.
Streisand.
Mecca Streisand.
These aren't, these aren't funny. You just like... These are almost like early Family Guy level jokes, and it's like... Nowadays, they're a little bit, you know, more
it's
nuanced
one of the reasons
their,
I
like,
defended
humor.
It recently on the Laser Time Community Facebook group. It was an AV Club article about how South Park had a bit to do. Yeah. Did South Park cause the alt-right by a bunch of apathetic teenagers weaned on this show for 20 years mm-hmm. where caring about things is uncool and the only thing that's important is the joke? I think there's some DNA in, like, sure, I think okay. that's I think yeah. that's one conclusion, but
I see how they relate. I don't think correlation equals causation.
Yeah, and yeah. If you want to really validate shithead beliefs, it's probably yeah. not happening on a Comedy Central
and
cartoon.
This show has been, there's a reason it's around for 20 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is funny, but mm-hmm. it's also like, it is a show that points fingers at both sides. So yeah. it can't, it like, because it, otherwise it's, I mean, you know, The Daily Show list has lasted for way longer, but yeah. this is like, yeah, if you're going to keep that same audience whose views may change in 20 years.
Yeah.
You should you never lean too hard in one direction.
And that's I defend it's hard it makes it hard for me to defend sometimes because yeah. people disagree because South Park was such a phenomenon for so long. People remember shitty things about the show yeah. like mm-hmm. are you denying climate change exists yeah. or mm-hmm. this is a lot of transphobic jokes and I think those criticisms are totally valid. People were giving me shit for defending the show because I don't want to go into it for the latest season, but it was a fascinating thing that happened, and that's because I give South Park the same benefit of the doubt I give SNL. Yep. It's a television institution. I'm not that interested in revisiting old SNLs mm-hmm. because most television shows don't have a week to respond to things.
Yeah.
South Park mm-hmm. is done in... Everybody should know that now. There's a great documentary. What?
6 minutes to air?
Five days to air.
Yeah, yeah. They come up with a show, animate it, voice it in 5 days. It's incredibly topical.
Yeah.
And when you're 20 years old and you make a show like that and... unlike SNL, your goal is to be as offensive and outrageous as possible. You're going to make some mistakes that look bad mm-hmm. in hindsight. Not saying that's okay, but it's something I give South Park slack on.
Yeah.
Because if I want to see boogers and cum, and I want to see Randy shit a turd log the size of his face, or the adventures yeah. of a gerbil inside someone's asshole, you accept the bad with the good. Because yeah. the highs of South Park are really yeah. high, but yeah. it's really hard to readdress. But I love that it's on, and I love the last 2 years they fuck around with formats, and I got mm-hmm. back into it because it was just really funny to see like a high level show respond immediately and offensively to issues of the day.
Yeah.
And if it was gone, I think people who criticize the show, you'd miss having something like that. You mm-hmm. should miss having something like that. Because right now you just have blathering heads on YouTube and some pretty okay former Daily Show cast members doing it once a week. But so, I don't know. What South Park does is different, and no one has ever tried to rip it off because yeah. it's too fucking hard.
Yeah. No, why I said... I'm shocked that it made it past 3 years was
yeah,
because
why?
It was instantly popular.
Yeah.
Immediately like hugely popular. Yeah. And I just didn't think I just sort of assumed that, well, either the pressure's going to get to them or mm-hmm. they're going to get bored with this and it's going to flame yeah. out, or it's going to chug along and have, oh, it was a good year and then it was a bad year. And all that. 20 years.
Yeah.
No way I would have believed that.
Yeah.
No. I figured just because, and also because, I mean, they leaned on so many running jokes mm-hmm. early
on.
There are
now.
So many running jokes that yeah. have gone through the show that just disappear over time, constantly. Characters fade into yeah. the background or introduced.
Yeah.
I love that about the show.
Oh my God, like, you killed Kenny.
Yeah, you yeah. killed Kenny, or the throwing up on Wendy Testerberger, yeah. mm-hmm. or, yeah, Mr. Hat, or.
Ay,
yeah.
caramba.
Yeah, yeah there's
don't kick the baby.
Yeah, there was so many things that, yeah, I just thought, well. I mean, it's funny, but that can't last.
Yeah, yeah I don't, and I'm not...
And it's changed. Yeah,
I'm telling you, I get
gone,
shit about this. I don't
that.
Always agree with the show, and I don't yeah. think I have the same beliefs as Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
No,
but,
I know I don't.
They are very, yeah, they're very centrist, and I am left.
Yeah.
And like, I'll watch the show and be like, oh, they maybe went too far with that, but it's yeah. like, they have to. That's what the show's been trading on for 20 years.
And that's why mm-hmm. I like the episodes when they do that on something yeah. that... gels with my yeah. beliefs. I don't get too mad at them when yeah. they do something that doesn't
yeah.
validate my beliefs, because it's mm-hmm. just a god. It's
yeah.
It's,
you know what? You can enjoy something that doesn't exactly cater.
It's allowed to go
mindset.
Further than almost any other show on television, yeah. and I just yeah. I don't ever want it to go away at this mm-hmm. point. And it has never been more interesting than right now.
Season, yeah, except for the last season was like, I mean, the.
I think it's something that'll be written about forever.
Yeah,
I don't know,
the second worst thing that happened with Trump getting elected is that he fucked up the latest South Park season.
Did.
Where,
yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, there was some of it. I thought they did a good job. With it, and some of it they didn't. I mean, they're going at the gentrification stuff. I thought
so
was
good.
Yeah.
Soto Sopa and Shitty Paw Town.
Yeah,
the lofts.
I will
Soto
recommend.
Sopa.
You will like the episode Craig Cross Tweak, where
yeah. oh yeah,
where the what is the Korean girls start drawing two yeah. male cast members as gay lovers, yeah. and they
right. and
it's so fucking funny.
It. Yeah.
It
yeah.
is so undeniably funny, and it doesn't. It's not. As offensive yeah. as some of the other
but
subject matter they tackled.
Over a seasonal. That's
yeah.
season four last. But last season was all like election based stuff. and the storylines just weren't really engaging. All the troll stuff. I didn't really.
Oh yeah, some
wasn't
of the
really
troll stuff.
Yeah.
The lofts at Kenny's house.
I know they crossed the line. I just do want to defend the show and say that, like, if you're gonna be that, take that many risks. Mm-hmm. On that short a time frame, you're gonna do regrettable shit from time to time.
Yeah,
but I think
that
the bad outweighs the good, and you can't blame a cartoon show for the creation of terrible people because there's a ton of other shit out there that validates that.
Yep,
and it's not just South Park. They're once a week on Comedy Central.
Yep, and can I say of all the topics they've gone after? Mm-hmm. I mean, stinky hippies is always makes me happy, even though I've been a stinky hippie. But honestly, Dave. The wrestling episode was so good. That is all I think about with wrestling now. Whenever you start talking about it, and then they did this and they did that, I'm like, yeah, they start a wrestling league where there is no wrestling.
WTF.
It's all story. It's all just like, oh no, you think I'm your manager? Well, I'm leaving you for this guy. And my girlfriend said this. And well, I'll see you next week and we'll settle this.
And then
they never wrestle. Ever. They never touch each other.
And then I think, was it at the end, Vince McMahon comes to like recruit them at their wrestling event, and he comes with like the opera binoculars. Like it's a fancy thing.
My word.
It's just live theater. But it was like, that was the best wrestling I've ever seen.
I just can't believe how long South Park has been on and how many things it's been through. I wanted to play those early clips to emphasize from you that's something that wasn't meant for the public to see and is edgy and uncut. 20 years later, tastes have changed and television standards have changed in America. So now that's what the show sounds like again. Mm. They made a movie in 1999.
Which was great
and high budget and push boundaries. The show could do. The show breaks those boundaries and makes 90-minute episodes constantly that are superior in every way to the film. Yeah. It's been on that long.
And if you want my rule of thumb, if Butters hasn't been introduced yet, the episode isn't good. Because he comes around late season three, early season four, where it's like, okay, now they understand, like, you know, half of the time the show is just about like four kids doing like kid shit.
Yeah. Well, and half of the time it's about the parents.
It's
the same trajectory the Simpsons writers talk about. It was all about Bart and being crazy with Bart, and they started to gravitate towards Homer the older they got.
That episode is amazing.
And Randy's
scary ghost.
And that was.
I just realized that, you know, some of the things, my least favorite things are some of my favorite episodes of South Park, making fun of those, because the anime episode, Fun with Weapons, is also one of my favorites.
What's Fighting Love?
Yes.
And Butters getting a fucking
dagger in the eye.
Yeah, Chinese star in his eyeball.
They dress him up as a dog so they take him to the vet. And it's so terrible.
The last episode as of this recording is the theme of it is South Park confronting the sentiments of its own fans and the things it's ashamed of. It has been really wonderful. I totally fell off the wagon for about a decade and came back on the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But can't say enough. Love that South Park's around. I hope it stays on forever. Going to the games as we close out 1997. Tetrisphere on the Nintendo 64.
Man, I'll talk about controversial.
Why?
It's 3D Tetris. Actually, I don't know anything else about it.
It's a great game.
Oh, okay.
It's a great game. And like, especially because Tetris, because of how it launched, was pretty synonymous with the Nintendo brand. So every console, I think, I don't know if there was something on the GameCube, but the portable systems, they all have a Nintendo-focused Tetris, and this is about the most evolved you can get in that realm, because, you know, go too far and you're not fucking Tetris anymore. But great music. I know a ton of people who love it. And we're going to go out by Diana's request. Tom Jones, you can leave your hat on.
Hell yeah.
Which I forgot is famous now as a stripping song because of the Full Monty.
Yep.
Wow.
Written by anyone?
Mm-mm.
Randy Newman.
Randy Newman. We'll see you in 2007.
I knew you were going to do that.
You can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on. You can leave your hat on.
Mr. Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea, it's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's anything worth all watching. And for August 11th through 17th, oh my god, it's an embarrassment of riches. Let's start with 75 years ago this week, August 11th, 1942, Wake Island came out, which is interesting because it's kind of like the first combat movie about World War II from the American side. once we were already in it, it's oddly watchable. I mean, it's obviously there's a lot of propaganda going on, but it, I mean, it felt like a lot of it just felt like a war zone. I mean, they did a really good job. How about we go to 40 years ago, August 1977, we got Suspiria, the Dario Argento, I guess it's a horror movie with dream logic, and it's real scary and weird and everything. Also, unfortunately, August 16th, 1977, marks the death of Elvis. We lost Elvis. He was only 42. Yes, he died in the bathroom. Drugs are bad, kids, even if a doctor gives them to you. I could just recommend an Elvis movie. I could just recommend Suspiria, but I have to recommend. They would take away my film snob card if I did not recommend. 50 years ago, this week, Bonnie and Clyde came out. Wow. I rewatched this. I showed it to my husband. This is a landmark fucking movie. When you compare it to the other stuff that was going on in 60s Hollywood, you know, it's still sort of old Hollywood and sort of stale. And Bonnie and Clyde brings in a lot of the stuff that's going on in European cinema with the editing and the attitude and the sexiness. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway play the two most attractive people in the universe who are really bored. And so they just start with the crime sprees, just whatever. But also there's like weird sexual tension and identity stuff going on. You also got Gene Hackman. You got the screen debut of Gene Wilder in a fantastic scene. Gene Wilder was always amazing, but he's so restrained, but also like kind of like Willy Wonka, like waiting for him to freak out. I 100% recommend Bonnie and Clyde. It is a film that influenced so many other films. The level of violence especially was not seen in Hollywood back then, and it still holds up today, 50 years ago later. So that's it for this week. Stay classic.
Heading into 2007 with Beautiful Girls by Sean Kingston. That is number one in the music charts. Also, we have new releases from Anthem for the Underdog by 12 Stones, Sex Sells by Black Audio, Worse Than a Fairy Tale by Drop Dead Gorgeous, I'll Stay Me by Luke Bryan, Singularity by May, featuring Master P, a compilation of unreleased tracks, and In Between by Paul Van Dyke. Man, when are we going to get to Master P? That was a huge Southern phenomenon. But I'm pretty out of it on music, except for this music, which leads us to our news.
Oh, wow. Speaking of beautiful girls.
So, if this music doesn't mean anything to you, good.
It fills me with terror.
Good.
Please.
I'm scared now.
You are listening to the music of Two Girls, One Cup.
Yes.
You have to say it. An early internet phenomenon.
Oh, yeah.
Two girls shitting in an ice cream cone or something like that, and then eating and throwing it up on themselves. And somebody did a giant "Where Are They Now" article, and they're those
dead.
No, they still work for that same company. They still do that kind of
making a very, very specific kind of porn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, twogirlsonecup.com went live August 12th, 2007. By September, I mean, in about a month, that's when the viral reaction videos start.
The reaction videos. I remember fighting, going all the way to the president at Games Radar, like, we need to do one of these with our whole staff.
Oh, God.
And he's like, we can't show that in office. I'm like, you're all a bunch of pussies. And I'm like, I watch South Park. Shut up. And in hindsight, wow, I'm surprised I didn't get fired for bringing this that high.
I mean, yeah, like, if you want to watch it and not watch it, you just watch the reaction videos, which are people watching it and getting sick.
Yes.
But I watched it once, and it is forever embedded in my brain, because it's one of those videos where it's like, it's so disturbing.
I was at a point where...
just forget it.
Like, Edgelord, whatever, they're the mythic South Park fan, nothing bothered me. Ugh. Made people watch it over and over again. Don't think I could do that now. A little more skittish.
I have to lie to myself about what's happening. I literally lie to myself that, no, it's soft serve ice cream.
Yeah, you don't like diarrhea play?
It's soft serve ice cream. You know why? It's not just what they're doing is so horrible, but it's the realization, this has a smell to it. And that just I can feel the bile at the back of my throat.
Is it not like the opposite
that.
Of asparagus where you can just, like, if you eat a lot of this, your poop won't smell like poop?
Actually, I have read that. Yes, cheese is something people who like that stuff. You know what? Let's leave the news. Let's get into the movies of the week.
We got a lot of movies.
Some of them are interesting. The Last Legion, Colin Firth.
This sounds odd. I mean, I don't know if it just came and went or if it just didn't get much of a release in the U.S., but it's kind of a King Arthur prequel movie.
Really?
With
Archimedes the Owl?
Yes. Let's just pretend yes. Yeah, where it's like a kid and he's played by what's his name? Sangster, who was he was the kid in Love Actually, and I think he's on Game of Thrones.
Colin Creevy and
No,
maybe. Not that kid.
And then
and
it's Colin Firth and Ben Kingsley. I guess Ben Kingsley's kind of supposed to be Merlin. Mm-hmm. But it's also it's about like the end of the Roman Empire and then they're looking for Excalibur and nobody really cares for this movie. No one really gives
a
shit.
No one cares for that property, and they keep trying over and over again. Like, what data do you have that people want to see a movie set around King Arthur that's not Sword in the Stone? None. They tried it again this summer. Didn't work.
Speaking of trying again,
this is
up.
The first time it didn't work. The Invasion with Daniel Craig and Nicole Kidman.
Yep.
This is the fourth remake of Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Every one of those remakes are great. I love every single one of them, especially the 70s one.
Yep.
The 50s one is really good, and even the straight-to-video 90s one is like perfectly fine mid-90s outbreak movie. They just announced they're remaking it again for a fifth time, because you got to do it every 10 years.
People have different paranoia things that they feel, you know, are worried about, and it's like, I mean, did they just not find the right one, or is terrorism too nebulous a thing to have people afraid? I mean, I don't know. It works better as communism, man.
I like thinking about it in terms of Invasion of the Body Snatchers is a name that everybody knows. But yes, Body Snatchers is a stupid 1950s sci-fi term. But every other movie kept that in there, leading the audience to believe, you've heard of this before.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is what you think it is. The Invasion dropped that and trying to sound
no
cool. And depending on Daniel, like it's that. I saw the poster. It's a purple headshot of Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig. Tells you nothing. It just says The Invasion. You might want to mention aliens. That's pretty cool. They didn't. Like, the marketing materials did not mention that at all.
Or just, I mean, the idea isn't that you're getting invaded by something. Mm-hmm. It's the idea, it's the paranoia, like in The Thing or something. The idea that it's like, you know, your husband leaves for work and comes home and he's a different person.
Yeah.
You know, but he's acting the same, but somehow you know something's wrong.
Has this person turned?
The
70s version is real good with that. Because if you watch, I got the Criterion edition on Blu-ray and I watched it again, and like, there are hints all over the background. This has been happening since the start of the film, and it just hasn't reached you yet. I don't know. It's really, really good. But
really
I, for one, welcome another Invasion of the Body Snatchers film. But this movie, I think, was really, really great. I would love to talk about this again. Some sad news about it, though.
When you want your name written into history, you have to pay the price.
The fact of the matter is, Bill is the best classic arcade gamer of our era.
I've probably seen Steve with tears in his eyes more than any other guy I know.
Oh, he's just come up short in a lot of things in his life, and I just think... nobody wants to do that all the time.
I love King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters.
This is a really fun,
Steve Wiebe versus Billy Mitchell.
Steve Wiebe versus Billy Mitchell, a man who set a ton... Billy Mitchell, a man who set a ton of arcade records back in the 80s and held on to them forever. And this middle school teacher, kind of down on his luck, decides to take it upon himself. Like, I think I want to try and beat the record. And he's, you know, he's just this nice, schlubby everyman. And the story is about, like, this... God, this horrible man, Billy Mitchell.
They are so fucking petty about this stupid thing.
Yeah. And I've met these people. I've seen these people. I used to work in games. Yeah. We all know a ton of shit about this dude.
Yeah.
It's a very weird situation, and they do occasionally sue people, and I'm no shit, like, trying to tread lightly on that.
I mean, like, I hadn't watched that many documentaries, up until my mid-20s, and this was one where it was like, oh, this very much shows, like, a guy trying to beat the system and it being stacked against him.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
Wants...
And a dumb, small, tiny system.
But it's like, Twin Galaxies or whatever, they are... in a lot of cases they're like, well, we need this kind of proof, and now this kind of proof, yes, and now this kind of proof. Oh, we didn't tell you that before. You need this kind of proof, and it's like Stevie. It's like, yeah, Steve Wiebe's just this normal teacher, and he just like this is a thing that he does.
Yeah, I saw there's a record. I think I can beat it.
Yeah, so he does it.
And Twin Galaxies, it's so it has an interesting story that before online leaderboards, yeah, before Guinness Book of World Records was paying attention to video games. Yes, there was this organization, Twin Galaxies, trying to tally the highest score of video games ever. They found Billy Mitchell as their Michael Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
And it turns out when somebody challenges them, they don't want their Michael Jordan to look bad. Mm-hmm. And this dumb, tiny organization, like set in a Minnesota basement, just conspires against this poor dude. And he gets his fucking dick kicked in.
They keep
throughout the entire film.
You've got to do a competition with them. Do this, do that. And yeah.
They won't concede the victory. And like eventually he does. Eventually he does. I don't remember where the documentary ended. Because Billy Mitchell, the bearded, long-haired,
hot sauce peddling,
he is riding his whole career is riding on the success of him being the greatest video game player in the world, which he was calling himself, and I guarantee you, he could not name one Call of Duty, at all. So he would be at
his kill death ratio.
Yeah, well, just saying, name one Overwatch character. Zelda.
He's the best at the video games remember in the arcades.
Yeah, but he appears at a bunch of shit we'd go to, and that's part of his appearance fees, and it's just so obnoxious and cocky and terrible.
He's the perfect villain.
He is a great villain.
The idea, though, is that you know, competition is supposed to make things better. It's supposed to push people farther. You're not supposed to try to stack the deck against competition. Mm-hmm. I sound so freaking capitalist right now. But, if Wiebe can prove that, he got a higher score, that should push Billy Mitchell to try to get even better. But instead, he's like, no, I don't want to. I just want to be the best, and everyone accept that. I don't want to have to keep proving it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really annoying.
And Steve Wiebe's also the perfect person to root for. He has a family.
He's such a dork.
He loves his family, but he's never been super great at things.
He cries on
camera. Yeah, but this is the one thing he knows that he's good at, and he wants to prove he can be the best at it, and he keeps getting stifled.
Yeah, all the time. And to stifle him once again, to coincide with the movie's release, Billy Mitchell beat his score.
Yeah.
To ruin the ending of the film.
I don't know who has it now, because I remember there was another guy. There was something Kim.
Here's the fallout, because this was optioned.
Had the record a bunch of times.
This was optioned immediately to be made into a major motion picture with actors. Well, what happened to that is that I think this film rekindled interest in beating Donkey Kong's high score. That was a very esoteric, small bubble of the universe.
Yeah.
Kill screen coming up. Fucking love that guy. Yeah. So as a result of that, the highest score in Donkey Kong has revolved between like five to ten to twenty people. It's currently, it's currently occupied right now by Wes Copeland, ranks number one. And the only positive story to show you how many people care about Wes Copeland.
Isn't he from Korn or something? Or
sure, yeah.
He's
the corniest guy in Korn.
No. Okay.
That was a terrible dad joke. But the best silver lining you have is on the leaderboards right now. Because after this, it was sort of interesting because Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell would trade the scores back and forth. And it was a competition. If live streaming was big around the time of the release of this film, I would have been watching the shit out of that.
Yeah.
But then a bunch of other people came in. So right now, the best silver lining you have is that Steve Wiebe is one slot ahead of Billy Mitchell on the Donkey Kong leaderboard.
All
right. At 12.
Whoa.
To Billy Mitchell's 13, because that's how many people now are competing to be the highest scorer in Donkey Kong.
Wow.
So you like that celebrity you had, Billy Mitchell? Hope you like being number 13.
I was thinking of Wes Borland from Limp Bizkit.
Yes. The guy who dresses in monkey costumes?
Yes.
It's definitely him.
Like you mentioned, that whole kill screen coming up, it is funny in a total, a bunch of memorable scenes. There's a Dad, wipe my ass. As he's going for the record, it's on the tape he had to submit for his record. Is his toddler son asking for his ass to be wiped by his dad.
And this resulted in a lot of other records, and there's a great other documentary called Nibbler about a guy, it's called Something Snake, but it's about trying to set the high score Nibbler and the weird little perils that go into that small community. And we see them at California Extreme. Well, I think we'll have been by the time this goes up.
Yeah.
And the final movie of the week, number one at the box office.
Here we go. So, Seth, you're coming to my party tonight, right?
Yeah, why? Should I not come?
Can you get us booze?
Yeah, I can.
Oh, that would be awesome. Plus, you scratch our backs, we'll scratch yours.
Well, the funny thing about my back is that it's located on my cock. So you do want alcohol? You want some sort of alcohol?
My brand new fake ID.
Wait, you changed your name to McLovin?
Doesn't even have a first name. It just says McLovin.
This guy's either going to think, here's another kid with a fake ID, or here's McLovin, the 25-year-old Hawaiian organ donor.
I am McLovin.
That's so good.
I heard Seth Rogen talk about this recently, and I mentioned something to the effect on another series of our shows that this movie is fun, charming, great, did very well, and he's like, I don't know that we're allowed to make movies like this anymore. It's not based on anything. It didn't have a bunch of giant stars.
Yeah, it's kind of like this. Well, this created the second generation, I think, of the frat pack.
Yeah,
with, like, Michael Cera and
Jonah Hill,
which, like, yeah, this is his breakout role in a big way. Like, the only thing I can remember him from before this was the guy who tried to buy shoes at the eBay store in 40-Year-Old
Virgin.
Yeah. He wanted to buy the shoes with the fish in them, and he's like, after that, didn't really do that much, and then he had this a year or two later.
And
I mean, two-time Academy Award nominee Jonah Hill.
Jesus Christ.
Yep. I like to remind people of that.
Jesus, it has been a minute. Man.
Yeah.
It still feels new to me, because this was written, one of the first screenplays written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, because they were supposed to play these characters, but Seth Rogen ended up having to play the cop along with Bill Hader.
Who are freaking hilarious.
It's really fun. It's a dirty sitcom premise, and it's like, but
it's not that much different than the We Gotta Get Laid 1980s movies, but just smarter and funnier and
filthier.
Everybody's
more likable. The least likable character in the movie, Jonah Hill's character, eventually reveals a lot of insecurities like, which makes you not hate him.
Yeah.
It's not the debut of Emma Stone, but I think it's like the biggest role she had. And she looks a lot younger there.
Yeah.
That's where I was first charmed by her of this film, I believe. It's a ton of fun. I hope it can air places.
But I mean, so this is another one I watched this last night. This is a double feature with Event Horizon.
Oh, wow.
Because I realized, I hadn't seen the whole thing. And also, Quest to Get Laid movies always make me nervous because I am such a killjoy feminist. That I don't like.
You don't like the hunt, Diana?
I don't like objects being treated like women. So so I watched this, and it actually was like more feminist and mature when it got down to it than I really expected. I mean, the whole idea that, like, they're trying to get booze for this party, and most of the thing is them trying to get booze for the party. When they actually get to the party, the girl Micah Sarah's into is already fucking trashed.
Wants to give him a blowjay.
And is just, wants to give him a blowjay. He's just all over him. And he says, like, no, it's wrong for me to have sex with someone because she's really drunk. And then I forget who tells him. It's like, no, just you get really drunk and now it's okay. And like Jonah Hill earlier was saying, like, you know, when girls say, like, oh, I got so drunk last night and I fucked some guy I really don't want to. We could be that guy. And he ends up doing the right thing of realizing, like, dude, you're not going to have good sex when you're about to throw up.
Yes. And I love the reverse situation of Jonah Hill trying to play up Emmett Stone, like, I got to get this girl booze so I can fuck her. And, like, she asked you to get booze because she was into you. And you... And you had to play this shitty little game and be an awful person.
You had it
in the bag, and she was just as nervous as you were.
Right. If you had just been, you know, a nice guy, then everything would be fine. And that's how it ends up working out at the end. Yeah. Guys, don't ever take any advice that Jonah Hill gives in this movie.
No.
Everything he says is wrong. Everything Michael Cera says is right.
But he's great at drawing dicks.
Be more like McLovin. A person who...
McLovin ends up having the best night of his life.
Just ends up hanging out with the cops and doing fucking, like, shooting shit.
They are so... Like, how much of that do you think is improvised? Because so much of their dialogue sounds improvised, and it's so goofy.
He's the one guy from the movie who... He didn't... Like, he gets
super
random roles.
Bad.
Yeah, random roles here and there, but it's like... What? Yeah, Christopher Mintz plus.
Well, he
pops up and stuff.
Yeah. It's difficult to play a prepubescent nerd in everything
ass.
Forever.
He's getting kick ass.
Yeah, but Superbad is a movie. Yeah, I'll go to bat for Superbad. I thought it was real fun, real charming, but it does seem like, for such being such a box office hit, surprisingly low key in 2017.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you can have a sex comedy.
Well, I think the surprise me is I've seen so many, like, teen sex comedies, but not one that gets so graphic.
Yeah.
I mean, just at the very beginning of the movie, you know, it's like Michael Cera's mom says bye to him, and he's like, man, can't believe you got to suck on them titties when you were a baby. He's like, yeah, but you got to suck in your dad's dick.
It's locker room talk, Diana. We all do it.
Getting graphic with the jizz jokes and pussies and every other kind of thing.
I even said pussies, write it down.
Yeah.
Jonah Hill can't stop drawing penises.
Can't stop drawing penises. A girl gives, you know, gets period blood on his pants. There's fights. There's
Joe Latruglio in one of his biggest roles I've seen.
Joe Latruglio is really fun. Yeah.
His ass kicked repeatedly. But getting out of the movies, we got to go into TV of 07.
Oh, man. We'll want to keep up with a sex addiction.
Indeed. Does this, will this describe
Californication, what it is? No, this is just it's an instrumental theme so you can put in the background. I don't know why I watched so much of this show.
I've never seen it.
I think it's because I really liked The X-Files. And I'm like, oh, I'll watch David Duchovny in something else. And hey, there's some other people that I like in the show. Okay. Bobby Hill's voice, I forget her name.
Pamela Adlon.
Pamela Adlon, she's really good in it. And it's okay. It's moderately funny, but yeah, it's just David Duchovny plays Hank Moody, this writer who also is like a sex addict, also kind of an alcoholic, and him trying to write like movies or whatever, books, and also dealing with the sex addiction, which actually David Duchovny has in real life. So yeah, it kind of, I don't know if this was good for him. I mean, he got like, what, 6 or 7 years out of it. But yeah,
it ran almost as long as The X-Files. That's what baffles me. I've never seen an episode of this, and I never hear anybody talk about
it. It's kind of like a slightly darker Dream On, where it's like, well, you know there's going to be boobs in this episode. David Duchovny's going to get some, and it's going to be usually someone pretty hot.
With no Three Stooges cutaways.
Yeah. Yeah, that they missing that vital element. But I don't know why I watched so much of it. I quit like a year or two before it ended, because I'm just like, there's lots of places on the internet where I can see boobs. And David Duchovny isn't particularly charming on this show.
The weird result of that is now the show can't really air anywhere else.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it went for 7 seasons. I'm assuming it has fans.
Crackle, maybe.
Crackle, to Crackle.
Yeah.
Also on August 14th, High School Musical 2. Wow, the highest rated basic cable show ever until Walking Dead season 5 premiered in 2014. Mm. I think we talked about that on a later time about best-selling albums.
Oh,
as
yeah.
Physical music was dying, it was being buoyed by High School Musical soundtracks. And High School Musical 2 soundtrack 2, that was the highest-selling album of that year, I believe. That's the best-selling album.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Man, and this show, speaking of Disney, this show also debuted.
There's 104 days of summer vacation, and school comes along just to end it. So the annual problem...
God, I feel old. Phineas and Ferb. Phineas and Ferb debuted 10 years ago. It's now no longer with us. But for a while, it was like, I don't know, like I play it, you know, I go to the Disney parks a lot. I have a lot of Disney games. They were put right alongside Little Mermaid and stuff like that. And I think notably, I was at D23 and Disney had just purchased Star Wars. And the first thing, I don't want to say shoehorn them into, but like the first official crossover was a Phineas and Ferb episode because they could react a little faster to it. But Phineas and Ferb, beloved, ended just a few years ago. It's one of the only Disney animated thingy-majigs of that era that has PS3 games.
Well, going from something that has games to something that's about games, I apologize. We did miss the first episode of The Guild, which debuted at the end of July. But yeah, the second episode.
Complicated.
It came out on the internet on August 14th, 2007. The Guild, which was about a group of online gamers starring Felicia Day.
The League for D&D.
Brought her into prominence. It never really aired on TV. It was just like...
It's an internet show, and I think...
You can buy it on DVD, I think, after a while.
What makes the release so weird is that I remember getting press releases about it. I turned down an opportunity to interview Felicia Day because I didn't know who she was, and now she's sort of... Man. I love her. Because I hadn't seen Buffy yet, nor Dr. Horrible Sing Along Blog, and after I did that, like, I will never do this again. And there's some video out there. I had a great interview with her. She's way more fun than you'd think, considering these roles were all her playing timid people, which she's not. She's really funny and loud. The Guild, the first or second season, Microsoft lined that up as a Xbox Live exclusive.
It was weird looking at the, like, here's the list of things that came out on when it debuted, like YouTube, but also FNFunny.com. What?
Yeah.
I'm sure this site is still around.
Yeah, I think it was a weird experiment with a game publisher trying to lock down video content, which they only gave up on recently.
I may have downloaded it because it's like, well, what else do I have on my 20 gigabyte hard drive for my Xbox 360? There was this episode of South Park that I got for free, and now there's this episode of The Guild that I just decided to download.
You're right, Dave. If I'm not mistaken, there was no streaming this content on your Xbox. You would have to
download it
on your 20-gigabyte hard drive or buy that customary proprietary hard drive in up to 60 gigs.
Yes.
Can you believe it? I guess that's a good segue into games.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Couple noteworthy things this week. Heroes of Mana came out on the Nintendo DS. Mm-hmm. So yet another game in the Mana series. Mm-hmm. Complete opposite of that is Madden NFL 2008, which came out on nine systems.
I
don't know if I can name nine systems.
I don't even think I could.
I can do it. I'm sure I can do it. Hold on, let me try. All right,
this
here we go.
2008.
Here we go. I know the one you're missing. It came out on PS3, Xbox 360, and the Wii. It probably also came out on PC, which I don't think the Madden games do anymore.
Oh.
PSP, and it came out on GameCube, PS2, and I believe this has the distinction... Is this the distinction of being the last Xbox original game ever released?
I still am lacking one.
How the fuck did that happen?
I'm going to say Nintendo DS.
There you go.
Yep.
I did it, sort of, with the help of Dave.
Yes.
But... I don't know. I just was reading a Mighty Number 9 interview, and like we launched in 10 platforms. You do realize nobody would ever do that, and like, yeah, that's why Madden, the biggest game in the universe, and no one else.
Yeah, and even they had the foresight to be like, nine was too many. Let's cut one or two of these next year because they're not performing well enough. But the biggest game of the week is Persona 3, Shin Megami Tensei Persona 3, which came out on PlayStation 2.
Bad week not to have Henry here.
Persona 3 is a RPG where you play as high school students that have personas. I know you've
Spin-off
played
of
4.
Shin Megami, but jumped on with 4. So it's funny to think that within 10 years, there's been two Persona games.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Because it takes that long, apparently. But
they're always like critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one on PS1 kind of stunk, but... After that, they're all like great. Like it's half dealing with high school drama and stuff like that, and having your classmates become your party members, so you have to like hang out with them. And
it's teenagers turning their anxieties into tactical RPG ghost like army members who fight evil adults in their own psyches. I swear, Di, it's wonderfully compelling.
This one,
I've heard, but that explanation made no sense.
It's a pretty great premise, and it's just, but above all, it's a really great RPG about exploiting weaknesses and fast turn-based attacks. But that's it for games this week. Unless Diana, do you have any games this week? this is we usually have a show where we do all our comments. I think we have a week off there due to some scheduling conflicts and a vacation. But you can check that out on patreon.com/lasertime. We love reading your comments, but we got way too many to read on the show that we're trying to keep under 90 minutes. So here is something we have from Awkward Loser from our July 28th, August 3rd episode. Her thoughts on the top 2007 movie. As I said, I never liked Sandberg on SNL outside of The Rat Man and Dear Sister, as I largely hate funny songs, but I really love Hot Rod as well as Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He works well in this sort of character, and this movie introduced me to Bill Hader and his stoic, almost creepy dryness. when I first saw him in SNL, he was doing Pacino, and I was like, nope, and now he's like legit a top five comedian for the last decade in Awkward Loser.
What a summer for Bill Hader.
Yeah.
Hot Rod, which I guess people didn't care about. Mm-hmm. But then that and Superbad within
Superbad.
A month. You know, there's a value to being like not the top billed guy, but like the sixth top billed guy in a comedy where you like you get your breakout scenes, and it's not the one thing you do that summer.
Mm-hmm. But we got to move on to let's depress us, Diana.
Well, before deaths, we have our
we do.
Plugs.
We get our plugs out. We have a death and birthday quizathon coming up. But our plugs out, you can find more at lasertimepodcast.com. That's where all of our podcasts live, including the show Lasertime, which I plugged several times throughout the year. Talking Simpsons, if you feel like we missed out on Simpsons stuff, we didn't because it didn't air in the summer. That's every single episode in chronological order with myself, Bob Mackey, and Henry Gilbert. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. It's how we live. It's how we do this for a living. If you like multiple shows of ours, you might want to think about helping us out
because
times can be tight. And this is hard to do for a living, and it doesn't make as much money.
Our Patreon, patreon.com/lasertime. We have a weekly show called Bonus Time where we talk about what is interesting to us in 2017.
We talked about the dog that you've been hearing, fighting other dogs.
Yeah, poor Steve.
And we also do movie commentaries, two a month. We've done, in the past, we've done The Monster Squad, and that was one of my favorite movies to do because it's one of those movies where I've seen it like a dozen times via an HBO recording that we had as kids.
And we did Simpsons movie for inspired by 302010, and we let people vote at a $10 level. And my God, you beautiful bastards voted for Planet of the Apes, and I got to watch that again and talk about it. And I was very—it's one of my favorite series ever. And I can't believe this is that period where, like, I won't be able to talk about it forever. It's not a movie in 30 years
and,
with apes.
I've been wavering on it. We'll have a schedule up by the time this episode airs, but like, there will be a hater. 2007 comedy in the I want to do either Hot Rod or Superbad now that I think about Superbad but it's like one of those two I think are prime commentary.
I'd be down territory. I'd be down. And Diana, where can people find you?
They can find me on Twitter at LecineNerd, LecineNerd. And if you want to hear about video games that I know nothing about, there's also a whole show called Video Game Apocalypse about that. Moving on to, let's talk Death and Rebirth, the cycle of samsara. Deaths this week, 1987, Clara Peller passed away.
Oh no, there's no more beef.
There's no more beef. She was the she's the Where's the Beef lady.
Oh man, I got plans for this, bro.
When did she like bust out? Like she died like right after her
success. Couple years earlier, I want to say like 83, 82?
I can only remember she was at WrestleMania 2, which was in 1986, so she had to have gotten popular in like 1984 or 5, so.
Yeah, but she was, what, 85 when she passed away? Yeah. So, yep.
I want to do a little thing on her, and I spoke about it on a Laser Time episode, because she is the least likely national phenomenon, think, in our country, in pop culture
and
history.
And you can tell, at WrestleMania 2, if you can find that clip, you have one job, lady. Say Where's the Beef into the microphone. And she's like looking off to the side, like waiting for her cue.
It's incredible.
Misses her cue. And then when it finally comes like 15 seconds later, she says, Where's the Beef? But she's shaking her hand to make the big gesture.
With a mic in it.
That the mic doesn't pick up her saying, Where's the Beef? And it's
because
like, holy cow.
She became the professional on-screen persona in her 80s.
Oh, my God. Oh, and in 2007, we lost Merv Griffin.
Merv Griffin.
82. So talk show host, novelty song singer, very, very smart investor, producer, creator of so many game shows.
Yeah, not many people have their name live on, but like he's behind Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. So every day, someone related to Merv Griffin is getting a paycheck.
Yep.
He helped furnish Kramer's apartment one time. And the weird thing is I've heard his name my entire life.
Yep.
I don't know what he looks like. Yeah. I'm sure I could have figured it out by now, but what?
He's got the pink shirt and the beanie. He's the daughter of Peter Griffin, right?
Oh,
that's Meg Griffin. I'm sorry.
You think that's bad? Watch me trounce Dave in a birthday quiz.
Oh, man.
Are you ready to die?
This is Griffin production.
We try and guess some birthdays.
Birthday is a doodle
do. What do we got?
All right, so researching birthdays is very time-consuming, and so I ran out of time this week, probably because I was rewatching so many movies. So I'm going to give you a date, some facts, and then I'm just going to start going through the filmography and see how we do. Skipping things that they are the star or the title character, because that's too easy.
Got it.
Okay, starting with born August 16th, 1962. Golden Globe winner and Oscar nominee. His understudy at Second City was Stephen Colbert. His films
Steve
include...
Carell?
Ah, you got it.
Yes.
Nice.
God damn.
His first movie is Curly Sue, man.
Wow.
He's in fucking Curly Sue.
Wow.
All right.
Now on the lady side.
On the lady side, born August 14th, 1966. She is the first woman of color to win Best Actress Oscar.
Halle Berry?
Damn, you're on a roll.
God damn.
A day sweep. I don't think that's ever happened
Diamond Dog sweep. I'm embarrassed.
I didn't even get to... Her first role was on the Who's the Boss spinoff Living Dolls.
Wow.
And then Jungle Fever.
Wow. Well, that concludes the birthday quiz.
Nice job, Dave.
Yeah.
302010 is out. I hope you enjoyed this wonderful little tour. Should we close out with a Monster Squad rap?
Yeah. We could do that. I gave you a couple options there. The closing theme from South Park and These Eyes, because that's the song that make him sing in Superbad.
Yeah. We just haven't had an excuse to play it yet.
Oh,
it's
love that rap, and it is so terrible.
Yeah.
It is super bad.
Yeah. The South Park theme, if you listen to the Laser Time episode about changed theme songs, the ending theme was the original theme, and Comedy Central hated it.
Yep.
Sped it up without Les Claypool there, and that's what you hear in the credits was the original theme song. That's it for 302010. Go to 302010.net or LaserTimePodcast.com for more. Like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening, people. Tell a friend if you feel like it. We'll be back next week with August 18th to the 24th.
100 years in the darkest night, the forces of evil come out to fight. The amulet they must destroy, or stand forever in the darkest void. Who can stop that deadly might? Now who will stand up for the right? From the mouth of babes comes dynamite. The monster squad gonna groove tonight. First came Dracula, now the Wolfman too. Mummy and the creature from the Black Lagoon. We need silver bullets, we need wooden stakes. Normal stuff won't stop because they live on hate. Speak some magic words from a virgin's lips. Maybe that'll shake you, make you slip and trip. There's no turning back, gotta fight the fight. Yeah, the Monster Squad, gonna jam tonight.
Monster Squad, we're the Monster Squad.
And the forces of evil better run and hide.
Monster Squad.